marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 32 after the hour, time for our Hemp Day Hump Day update, and we are going to... We got him on the line. I just got to make sure that he can hear me okay. You got me, Doug?
Loud and clear from the hemp finish line, Russ. That's where we're coming from today.
What is the hemp finish line?
Well, since we're our last Hump Day segment, gosh, I don't even know where to begin. Three major things, but one of them is, I don't know if you can feel it in my voice.
Yeah.
It's one thing to follow hemp. It's one thing to witness hemp. It's one thing to document and report on hemp. It's one thing to know of its impact. It's another to be out there as the farmer supervising a hemp planting. 23 acres in the soil in Vermont last week. It was the finish line, man. It's growing already. I've been tweeting the pictures of the sprouts like they're my kin.
That's great. So hemp farming in Vermont, 23 acres happening. That's some good news.
Yeah, so we've got Vermont, it turns out, with its inexpensive registration process and basically a hands-off, no help, no harm kind of attitude, it turns out this is the way to go, because if you're talking about expanding the program to the maximum under current federal and state law, because the U.S. supply of hemp, which is protected under federal law, including interstate interaction between approved hemp programs that's explicitly permitted under hemp law, thanks to a provision in a big spending bill last December. The U.S. supply is coming back so fast that all the hoops that have had to be jumped through for permits to import seed are becoming less and less vital. I'm an eternal optimist, Russ, and it's coming back faster, and it's because it's needed and the markets are there, and it's magnificent to watch. And so Vermont basically has a hands-off policy, and that's what's allowed it to thrive. We've got a farmer's co-op going. There are three families involved, and we worked our butts off for a week. My every picture, if you look at Organic Cowboy on Twitter, every picture I'm beaming. I'm happy to be out there in the hot sun lifting rocks and running this disker in a hot Vermont spring day.
That's wonderful. We love hearing those stories, and I have been checking out your Twitter feed and seeing some of those pictures, so it does look like you're having a lot of fun. And as far as New England area hemp farming goes, I saw a blurb about Rhode Island making a change. They were going to legalize hemp just for some tribes, and now they're going to open up for everybody. Did you catch that?
Man, you know, this just goes to show, A, how fast hemp is moving, and B, what it's like to now, after Vermont, to be working on hemp on Maui, which is, you know, it's not just a physical island, it's a news island. But even this past week in Maui, which we haven't talked about, for Hemp History Week, really fun time there, really fast-forward development on hemp in Hawaii. What did filter through to me were changes in North Carolina. North Carolina's making a mistake. I'm sure they have their own reasons, restricting hemp acreage, opposite of the way to go, in their program. And what was the other states I've been hearing about? I just got a big hug from my 6-year-old son. He just checked my train of thought. But I did not hear about the Rhode Island situation. But Maui was a fantastic time, because they are focused on that island on food and energy independence. So my message fits right in with the most traditional and the most progressive thinkers on that island, and we got fired up this past week.
All right. And just the other day, yesterday, I had a guest on the show, Bruce Dietzen, who was with the Hempsters Cannabis Car Tour. We got to talk a little bit about Henry Ford and the old cannabis car. And I'm wondering if you have any other updates as far as, you know, the uses of hemp or some of the developments that are happening for, you know, technologically.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we've had fun in the past here on Hemp Day talking about the plastic that's already being made, the petroleum-free plastic, the incredible supercapacitor research results for hemp fibers. I can't emphasize enough how much these next generation technologies are going to work. But I've really, this last week, been really in touch with the soil. What Hawaii needs is healing from a century and a half of monoculture, often sugarcane monoculture, but some others as well. And that before picture that I'm seeing there, his soil like bowling balls hard compacting over all these years, and then the recovery of people who are starting to rebuild the soil that allowed the food forest to thrive during the pre-Western times on these same hills. There's illustrations and even early photographs of some of these lands still thriving and functioning with native plants. And speaking to farmers about working hemp into that really has me thinking about soil, because when you see what happens in the tropics, how quickly everything wants to grow, and it's just unbelievable. Like, producing papaya trees that volunteered 2 years earlier, how much everything wants to grow there, then to have the message impressed that don't even look at what's happening above the ground. It's all about what's happening in those first 7 inches of topsoil. That's really gotten me back to the other side. It's all part of the same story. But while I'm normally thinking about next generation apps, right now I'm thinking about rebuilding soil and the value of that beyond getting the best quality hemp products for those next generation apps. It also is about sequestering carbon and mitigating climate change, which is important for the species survival. And the way that that picture just completely goes together, and farmers the world over get it now, that's really just the magic of what I've been thinking about the last week.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that development and a lot of that awareness that is growing with the adoption of industrial hemp. And now more and more legislators around the country that seem to get it, where before they would always try to hide behind, you know, oh, it's too much like marijuana. We won't be able to tell the difference. They don't even bring up those silly arguments anymore, do they?
I think less and less. I wish somebody would with me so I can say, and your problem with zero deaths ever psychoactive cannabis compared to alcohol is,
yeah,
I'd say it's all one plant and it's all great. It's all, have you not seen, I mean, Hickenlooper, as we know in Colorado, I'm sure, Russ, you've probably covered this at length. I mean, you have this initial politician who says what he or she thinks is going to, you know, most appeal to the most important voting segment at that moment, right? So you had nothing but resistance to the will of the people to a dang constitutional amendment from the governor, and he's changed his tune. He's seeing the lowest unemployment in the nation.
Yeah.
He's seeing shut down, shuttered Pueblo reopening with cannabis processing, and he's like, you know what? This rocks. And so anybody who's pretending it doesn't, they're living that, like, they're leaving last century, and they're welcome to catch up, you know.
Now, as we move forward with more legalization, everybody's looking at the state of California for 2016 and passing Adult Use of Marijuana Act. And do you worry about legal marijuana crowding out the interest in wanting to grow hemp, that there might be more money in legal buds and less in legal stocks?
No, I don't see a division. It's all the same to me.
Well, there's only so much land, though, is what I'm saying. Is that, like, farmers are choosing what to go into, would they choose, psychoactive cannabis over industrial hemp to the detriment of developing hemp in California?
I tell you, in the other legalization states, there's no shortage of people that want to cultivate hemp. Colorado is increasing 1,000% in acreage per year. I'm just astounded. There's that multi-thousand acre farm, single farms of growing thousands of acres this year. They can't keep up with it. I just did an interview with their Department of Ag head. Can't keep up with the application process. Same growth. We're seeing basically 1,000% growth everywhere, okay, annually for hemp. So to me, it does all work. And I really, but honestly, I'm glad you asked the question, Russ, because for me, I like to look at, the true finish line of the complete end of cannabis prohibition. To me, the cannabis plant will just have one name of cannabis. It'll be cultivated like any other crop, chickpeas or tomatoes. And for the percentage of cultivation that involves a finished product and only a finished product that might have psychoactivity, it's just similar to the way beer alcohol is sold, no big deal. But for the rest of the plant, similar to, let's say, the wheat that goes into beer, it would be just, like absolutely in your grocery store, produce aisle, cannabis flowers for nutritive, whatever, and plus value-added products. That's already coming. You already see CBD oils and flowers just in a grocery store in places like Luxembourg. But I don't think we're going to be delineating between hemp and other kinds of cannabis very soon. People are going to be cultivating based on what the application and final market is.
And that's, we're seeing a development in the hemp side of things with what you mentioned, those CBD oils and the idea of growing industrial hemp crops for extraction of CBD. How is that going to shape the market?
It's a good question, because in the projects I'm involved in, Vermont, Oregon, and now Hawaii, I like the idea of growing for flower, especially when you're local. If you're growing something, a fantastic local cultivar that's going to just be available at the farmer's market or grocery store regionally or locally, be the best, and you're always going to have a market. That's true for psychoactive or non-psychoactive. But in terms of hemp farmers that see the real value of growing, basically growing psychoactive style, but just a plant that when processed has less than 0.3% THC, and thus is technically today absurdly defined as hemp, you know, I advise people not to put all eggs in one basket, because you never know what or if the saturation point is for straight up CBD. I really think beyond just one cannabinoid and my own kind of planning and marketing for the projects in which I'm involved. But because we don't know the future and this is all so new, there's not really a downside to diversifying. And so let's, for instance, in the Vermont planting I was telling you about, we planted some at nice flower spacing and some at seed spacing. And as we research what the value added potentials are for products that we create our own and or potential wholesale markets for various kinds of cannabinoids, we may wind up thinning some of the more tightly placed seed acreage if we see more value in allowing the space for flower production. So it's just a question of watching. And, you know, this is one of the fun things about hemp is, like, there's no department you can let go of paying attention to, from agronomic to marketing to legal to political to everything. But the good news is the undeniable sense that we're there and we've won. It's Hemp is a major hemp cannabis is a major part of the future of American agriculture. We all know it.
Yeah, and getting to talk to the hempster car tour people, it was interesting to learn that Henry Ford's 1941 hemp car was like 4 or 6 times greener than a current, you know, hybrid type car. And then to think we could make cars with hemp body parts and eventually the batteries, you know, that hemp battery technology we're talking about, we could have our cars running completely on hemp. All right. That's Doug Fine. Somehow we've dropped our call with Doug, so we've got to call it a show. I think, yeah, a segment, I should say. Very interesting. I think my Skype account just short-circuited on me. Okay, well, we'll get that fixed for tomorrow's show. My apologies to Doug for the abrupt cutoff, but that's the way it goes sometimes. We're doing it live. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, free Roger Christie and the rest of us while you're at it.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.